This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Houston, this is the SS Salty Rocket. Are we clear for takeoff?
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have liftoff.
The following program is a show intended for an adult audience. Our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
You're with
poor Andrew the Apprentice.
On Hide and Seek.
That's right, you are also with Avi Miller tonight. This is your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Now, Avi,
Yeah, I think we're shifting from, you know, basic toy play, which is possibly, you know, sexuality 101. We're getting into our bodies. We're learning about the vulva and the puppet.
Yes, that's right.
Second hour is possibly advanced sexuality, I think.
Quite possibly, or maybe not. Ooh. Who knows?
We're going to find out. We're joined in the studio by Anne Hunter from Your Relationship Tool Belt. Welcome, Anne.
Well, hi. Nice to be here.
Thank you.
We're talking all things polyamory.
Indeed.
So let's start off, define what polyamory actually is.
Polyamory is the practice of multiple ethical, caring relationships where all participants are aware of and consenting to it.
So that's the ethical part, is the consent.
Yes, yes.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily a equivocal situation. For example, if there are three people, it might be, you know, boy has a girlfriend and girlfriend has a girlfriend, but the boy doesn't have two girlfriends, he's just got one.
Yes, that's one possibility. And that we would describe as a V,
okay,
where somebody in the middle has two relationships and the people on the end are not in relationship with each other.
Ah, okay.
So that's a V, and the person in the middle is the hinge of the V.
So let's talk about your background a bit. You teach courses on ethical, the name of your course is Ethical Non-Monogamy.
Mindful Non-Monogamy.
Mindful,
yeah, that's
Non-Monogamy.
Right.
Yep. Yep. How did you get into teaching about this?
10 years ago, my partner at the time then and I ran a workshop on polyamory at Confest, and it was very well received. And back then, the big question was, where do you meet poly people? And still a big question. And so we started PolyVic, Melbourne's polyamorous community.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just such a big need for information. And so over the last 10 years, I have been running workshops and discussion groups. We hold monthly discussion groups with PolyVic, and I've been part of forums like Pleasure Forum and Quench, and, you know, just I've noticed that in the last about 3 years, polyamory is really starting to hit the media in Australia, and there's a lot of interest in it. So, and the problem is, it requires communication skills and relationship skills that we are not taught. So,
yeah,
this is why we are now teaching them.
I'm guessing some of the interest has probably got, depending on which media it is, probably, has probably got different motives.
Yes, yes. I have not yet, we've had a few approaches from a few sources that we haven't taken up.
Sure.
So far, I have to say that all of the media that I've engaged with has been very positive and curious. And that includes a couple of more, what you would think of as a couple of more conservative radio stations and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're now getting to the point where they actually want to know what is this, rather than simply disparaging it. So that's good.
And obviously, you know, 10 years ago, you started with your first polyamory workshop.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a broad assumption here, but you are polyamorous yourself.
Gosh, I am. What a surprise.
Didn't ask
I know there was a bit of a risk there. Yes.
But let's talk a bit about coming out, because, of course, you know, here on Joy 94.9, we have a range of coming out stories, whether you're coming out as gay or lesbian, whether you're coming out as trans, whether you're coming out as intersex, whether you're coming out as something else. Coming out as a poly must be right up there as well, because it's not something that's well understood.
You're dead right. Mm. It's really up there. And there are people who, for example, cannot come out at work, because I used to work in a very conservative section of the community. And had I come out as bisexual and polyamorous then, I really would have lost half my business. So coming out is a big risk for a lot of poly people, in particular people with kids. There's, you know, either you tell your kids and they keep it a secret and that's a really big secret, or they don't keep it a secret and they tell their friends and then their friends might bully them about it, or their friends might tell their parents and then it comes back, you know, somehow, or the school might find out, and there are people who've had protective services called just because they're polyamorous. So yes, there's quite a bit of risk for some people in some areas coming out.
And I suppose this is, it's also the combination of not only are you coming out as polyamorous, but you're also potentially coming out as bisexual. So you have you're coming out with a sexuality that's non-mainstream, for want of a better term.
Yeah.
And you're also coming out with a relationship choice. What is the right term? Where does polyamory sit in that
spectrum? That's a great question. It's a really good question. And I think the research, there hasn't been enough research to be able to answer that question definitively yet. So people like me, I grew up a conservative Christian, and I can look back on my conservative Christian early days as an adolescent and see times when I was attracted to more than one person and felt like I had to choose. And if I had known that there was an ethical option back then, I would have been poly all my life. So I could call it, for me, an orientation. But there are other people for whom it is definitely a choice, and if they met the right monogamous person, they could quite happily be monogamous.
Now, something else that Avi mentioned there, and I'm going to pull him up on that and ask you the question, do you have to be bisexual to be poly?
No, not at all. Of course not. No, definitely not. In fact, the poly community is great because it actually covers an amazing amount of the spectrum. We have people of kind of every identity, orientation and choice, if you like, mostly represented, not entirely, but mostly represented in our
Who community. Are you missing? Because we could ask our listeners if they're...
We don't have a lot of gay males. And I think the reason is they don't need it. A lot of the gay male community is at least comfortable with non-monogamy.
So that was going to be my question. What is the spectrum difference, if you like, between polyamory and having an open relationship? Where would you define the difference of that?
It's a really good question. And in fact, I've just been talking about this week. The term open relationship is very broad. On the whole, it tends to refer to a couple who have an open relationship. So it tends to be couple oriented. And on the whole, they tend to be people who see or date or have sex with people outside. But sometimes that's all it is. It's just sex. Sometimes it's other relationships. Sometimes an open relationship looks like something that I would happily call polyamorous if they chose to identify it that way, but they don't choose to identify it that way for whatever reason. So there is overlap.
It's interesting. I think for the gay male community, it's not a poly is not a term that's used. It's open relationship or whatever.
But I mean, most of my gay male friends are comfortable, even if they're monogamous themselves, they're comfortable with non-monogamy. So they've got plenty of friends who are not monogamous.
Yeah.
And it's not new to them. It's not, you know, they don't need to find a community where they can talk about it, because they can already talk about it.
And I'm sure it's something that we'll touch on, and it's the S word. We'll touch on the S word stigma later on a bit, I'm sure. But I think amongst the gay male community, I don't think there is the stigma around open relationships to the same degree.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's why they are less represented in the poly community than are all of the other permutations and combinations you could think of.
And that's probably natural in a way that, yeah. that if unless there's a need to coalesce around something, then there's not the need to engage.
Mm. Yeah.
Hide and seek.
Joy 94.9.
And you're with Andrew the Apprentice and Avi Miller. We are talking with Anne Hunter from Your Relationship Tool Belt. Tell us a little bit about the tool belt. What's that about?
It's called the tool belt because you need relationship tools. You need communication tools. There are things, for example, jealousy. Jealousy is a really big topic that comes up in polyamory all the time. And there are simple tools for dealing with it. But often nobody explains to you that what we call jealousy is actually something you can break down into smaller elements and deal with, for example. So it's tool belt because you need tools in your belt to be able to manage the complexity of polyamory well.
And as you said, it's not something that we talk about or communicate with each other about necessarily to be able to give people the tools to do that.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. I would love to see basic communication skills taught in primary school. I don't know why we don't. It's so essential for life.
And we're talking not necessarily sexual communication. We're just talking open communication about topics.
Yeah. We're talking about, for example, how to, first of all, identify within yourself what you want and then be able to communicate it to your partner and then listen to them talk about what they want and then listen to their other partner talk about what they want and between you all to work out what works for you all. Now, even between in monogamy, you need good communication skills for a good relationship and we don't get taught it. You can get away without it in monogamy because our society supports it, but you cannot get away without it in polyamory.
So give us maybe let's take Andrew's favourite hypotheticals. maybe a young questioning poly person or somebody who even later in life is going, something's not quite right. I'm in a relationship, but I keep looking at other people. And how do you go about sort of getting introduced to polyamory, if you like? What is a good way to get introduced to the community or into the lifestyle, again, for want of a better word?
Mm. I have to say, so 20 years ago when I came out of marriage and started being non-monogamous and I didn't even have the word, my partner and I were making it up as we went along and we were on our own largely. And that was really hard. So I would say, don't try and do it on your own. It's really hard. Join a community. Join PolyVic. Find other friends. Find other people. Start talking to people because you will get a lot of not so helpful advice from monogamous people if you are struggling with issues to do with polyamory. You know, if your monogamous relationship is having problems, people don't say, oh, see, monogamy's the problem and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But they do that with polyamory.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you're much better to get support and help from people who've been there and done that and know what they're doing.
And like the gay community, I'm sure that it's not just the community is not just about sex. It's about sharing experiences and learning from each other. It's not that if you put a group of gay men in the room, they're all going to be having sex together.
Yeah.
Just, I'm sure, as it is with the poly.
Do you know,
group.
I have not yet seen sex happen at a discussion group or a social.
Well, I'm told it requires
parties
a bowl.
Parties may be a bit different. You know,
a bowl and some cockies.
No, that's swinging. No. Okay.
And we are, in fact, again, one of the things that you know, I love to explore is kind of the spectrum from polyamory through open relationships to swinging to, you know, where is the line between polyamory and swinging, for example?
Yeah, so the most commonly known forms of multiple relationship in the Western world are swinging, where that again is usually couples based and the emphasis is on sex, and sometimes there's even a prohibition against forming an emotional connection with somebody outside the primary relationship or falling in love. And then there's cheating or affairs, where not everybody is an informed and consenting member to the arrangement. And then there's polygamy, usually religious polygamy is the one that's most commonly known, where there's usually one man with several wives who are not allowed to have multiple spouses of their own. So polyamory, the word comes from the roots poly, meaning many, and amor, meaning love. So it's many loves or many loving. Mm-hmm. So the emphasis in polyamory is on the emotional connections. So you can have poly relationships that aren't sexual but are deeply intimate. For example, one of the lovely things about polyamory is that you can actually identify as asexual and still be polyamorous and have right. multiple intimate and romantic relationships that don't involve sex. There are people like, for example, I have some luscious intimates who I don't have sex with, but with whom I will take off all my clothes and jump into bed naked and cuddle and talk about anything. Now, that goes way beyond friend for most monogamous people, but it's not lover because it's not...
you don't have an orgasm.
It's not about sex. Not about sex at all. And it's the one I call it them intimates, but that's just my word for it. There isn't really a label that goes with it. And another thing that you'll find with polyamory is that relationships morph. So they might start off being hot and horny and become actually not sexual but a deep friendship or a deeply engaged, intimate relationship.
So that's a big difference to swinging than what I understood. So swinging is very much the sexual end of the spectrum.
What one would call wife swapping in the 70s kind
that
of thing.
Misogynous term for swingers these days are distancing themselves from the keys in the bowl and the wife swapping on the whole.
Right.
So there's a term now called progressive swinging, which is swingers who actually look for people that they have an emotional connection with. And for me, that's where swinging overlaps with polyamory.
Sure.
But the identifying thing with polyamory usually, and this is even with people who love sex, love sex with lots of different people, but if they're poly, they will A, be very honest about what they're offering and what they're not. They will be clear about their other connections, and there will be a sense of emotional connection and care even in short, brief one-night stands.
Hi, this is Dan Savage, and you're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9 with Andrew the Apprentice. I'm Avi Miller. We're joined by Anne Hunter. We're talking all things polyamory. We've had an email.
We have.
On air at joy.org.au from Bronwyn, all about Melbourne Poly Tribe. It's a community. You can find them on Facebook. Just search for Melbourne Poly Tribe. They hold regular meetings and picnics for poly families.
Yeah, they're great for families, actually. They're really good.
Now, Anne, something that is probably common to us gays and also polys is stigma and the perceptions of our communities. And I suppose what it comes down to is really the crux of the issue is often that perception about sex. Which is often at the root of things and the perception of unnatural sex and unnatural attraction.
Yes.
Do you know people of the community, the poly community, and what are they told about stigma and difficulties that they've had in various circles?
Yes. Yes, it's a big issue for a lot of people. As you say, the stigma around sex, the sort of sex negativity of the wider community has affected quite a few people. And in particular, seeing we were just talking about families, it really affects people with kids. As I was saying, we've known people to have had quite negative experiences from their friends and family, to lose support from people they know. This is very common. Coming out is really difficult for a lot of people because of the risk of stigma and of loss of support. But in particular, people who have families are really worried about the impact that will have on their kids at school. If the kids' friends find out about their their lifestyle. And it's a real problem, particularly for poly people, because they generally are poly because they value honesty.
Mm.
And they don't want to model dishonesty to their kids, so they don't want to hide it from them.
And, yeah.
You know, but they don't want to load their kids with this big issue where the kids either have to choose to hide it from their friends and carry a secret or, as I said before, tell their friends and risk a whole bunch of repercussions.
Because you, and I suppose that also leads to misunderstandings from the external community that the kids have to interact with, that, you know, Jane's mommy has a husband and a girlfriend and Jane's dad has a boyfriend.
Yeah, and there's this perception that, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, that unless kids are brought up by two heterosexual parents in the same house, you know, they're ruined for life.
Yeah,
yeah.
Whereas the research, now there's not a lot of research yet out there, but what research there is about poly families suggests that the poly families, poly parents are very concerned about their kids' emotional well-being and that the kids are actually either the same as kids from monogamous families or else they do slightly better on some aspects like, oddly enough, communication skills and negotiation.
<Of course>. honesty.
It's the same for the kids of the gay
parents, exactly.
Isn't it?
It's very similar.
And it's interesting, I suppose, reflecting on what you're saying, it's almost got to the point amongst some people that the stigma for poly is almost worse than the stigma for gay people, particularly when we look at the marriage, equal marriage debate, because, you know, it's like people accept, yes, okay, let's allow gay people to get married, let's allow two people to get married, but there's that step further in recognition of families of more than two people is beyond the realm of possibility at the moment.
And what's interesting is I had this great conversation with a couple of older lesbians at Adelaide at Quench one time, and they were saying that in the 70s when they were coming out, polyamory was just de rigueur for the lesbian community back then.
Yep.
And it was pretty normal. And now, you know, there's a sense that with the equal marriage lobby, that there's a sense that people are distancing themselves from broader types of relationship.
It's interesting you say that because I had never heard that before.
I hadn't until that.
The 70s for the lesbian community, if that was the case. And we had a great conversation here last week about with a couple of lesbians at different spectrums.
We were learning all about lesbians
lesbianism last week. And we were on quite a journey for the last couple of weeks.
We did.
Their perception is, of course, the coupling of lesbians is across the board. I'm also thinking about is this something that a trajectory for gay men as well?
Well, one of the things that I find interesting about last week's discussion and leads from what Anne was saying is that now there tends to be this generalized, I'm being general here, but the serial monogamy amongst lesbians, but because the community isn't very big, you're always dating a friend's ex.
Because everyone's, you reckon the lesbian community isn't that big? You should try the poly community. And especially when you can date more than one person at one time. It's infinitely more so.
Joy. 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 Joy.
Hide and seek.
So sexy it hurts.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Andrew the and Avi are with you.
Andrew and the Avi.
Andrew sure. The apprentice and Avi are with you. We're joined by Anne. Add another A into the mix. Anne is here to talk about polyamory. She is from, she's running Mindful Non-Monogamy Workshops.
Yeah, that's right.
And you run a little group called Your Relationship Tool Belt.
That's our business.
That's your business?
Mm. Yep.
Now, there are a lot of myths around polyamory. One of them we were talking just quickly during the break was that polyamory fringe relationships don't work.
Yeah. I think that's the very biggest myth underpinning all the other myths around polyamory, is that it can't possibly work. And you know what I find amusing about this? You know, the rates of divorce, the rates of infidelity, and the rates of serial monogamy, nobody ever says that monogamy can't work.
Yeah.
Mm.
But
well, Dan Savage does, but yes. I think he's a lone voice.
Yes. We don't all... Yes, that's true. Yes. So we think he's a lone voice. So, yeah. If you consider with monogamy that if some people can make it work, then it works.
Yeah.
Yeah? Then I can say I have been with my longest term partner for 20 years and he has another partner of about 13 and a half years, and I have another relationship of 8 years, although that has just recently changed from being partner to undefined intimate, and that's largely because he's interstate, and we just found that it was very difficult to make a partnership work at distance. And then we all have other relationships that are, and I mean, all of those are longer than the average marriage.
Mm.
And I know several other groupings that are quite long term as well. So it can work.
Yeah.
So what are the, I mean, that is the, possibly one of the biggest myths. What are some of the most annoying myths for you, the ones that you have to dispel?
You know one that pisses me off most?
Oh, yes, we want that one.
That because I'm polyamorous, I'm available and interested in everyone and I have no taste. That really annoys me. The number of people whose eyes light up when you say you're poly and they just think you're available on the spot.
So that
again, it comes back to it being all about sex.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the really big ones, the mixing up of polyamory with, as you said, wife swapping and keys in the bowl.
Yeah.
That it's all about sex, that it's unethical, it's immature. You know, when we all grow up and become responsible, we'll all revert to monogamy.
Mm.
Is kind of one of the really big myths, I think. What are some of the others?
I'm guessing one would might be that it's that people would take the Mormon, what they know about Mormonism and bigamy,
yeah,
polygamy.
Yeah. Where all polyamory would be one male and lots of wives type scenarios.
Yeah, it does get mixed up with that as well. And in fact, one of the fabulous things about polyamory is that it's often woman driven because it's one of the few forms of multiple relationship that's really empowering to women.
Mm.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So, we get equal numbers of men and women in the community, but you'll often find it's women who are pursuing it. It was certainly in my case. I was the one who wanted to be non-monogamous.
No, that raises an interesting question. Do you find that men or women or who? This is possibly a difficult question to answer, but do men accept polyamory easier? Do women, like if
I know, haven't found the a gender bias
okay
yet
yeah.
in that it really no I really can't say that I've found a gender bias yet, and of course I haven't done research so I don't actually know the answer to that, but not as far as I can tell. It's up to individuals. So
now, which was the other myth, obviously we've spoken a lot about families and the challenges that are faced by polyamorous families, but we should say that it is actually possible to be an open polyamorous family.
Oh yeah. We've got heaps of fabulous poly families, and you know, Melbourne Poly Tribe, they've got a whole bunch of really great families. And one of the things that poly groups often do is form tribes. So the research, one of the things research does show is that kids do better with more loving adults in their lives. And what a lot of poly parents do is develop tribes of loving adults who will be committed to the kids. And quite, this is very common, that even if the adult relationship changes status, like it's no longer a romantic or sexual relationship with the adult, they will maintain their commitment to the kids and continue to see the kids and continue to have input.
And that goes right back millennia about how to raise a good community, isn't it?
It takes a village.
It takes a village to raise a child.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hide and seek.
Joy 94.9.
You certainly are on Joy 94.9 and you are on Hide and Seek. We are talking to Anne about polyamory and one of the things that we were joking about during one of the earlier breaks was the scheduling nightmare. Because, I mean, I work 60 hours, I travel 10 hours a week, and I don't have time for anything else.
Yeah. And that's definitely one of the challenges of polyamory. There's heaps of joys. There are heaps of fabulous things about polyamory. But one of the challenges is time management. It's one of the biggest things that poly people report. Because it takes quite a lot of time to maintain one relationship.
Mm. Yeah.
And it takes at least double that, and sometimes more than double that, to maintain more two, let alone more than that.
Do you have a feeling for how many poly, and I'm going to use the term poly relationships to imply everyone involved, if yep. you like, who live in a single dwelling versus how many people would have multiple dwelling relationships? I mean, I can imagine that it might be easier to do this kind of scheduling if everyone lived in one house.
Yes. So there are definitely households that do that. In fact, there are households who have built their own house for their own group to
facilitate.
Facilitate exactly that. And there are other people who choose to live within easy walking distance from each other, and I have quite a few people in easy walking distance from me, in
right.
fact. Yes, so scheduling is in fact one of the serious challenges, and all hail Google Calendar.
And I suppose that the one of the aspects of scheduling and that to come out of that is obviously boundaries.
Yes, yeah.
And so, you know, some of these relations might not want the forced intimacy, if you like, of everyone living in one house. They
exactly.
might like the boundaries of that's your space with partner A and this is your
that's
space
right.
with partner B. And
in fact, my choice is to live in my own flat on my own, technically my own, although mm-hmm. my partner of 20 years lives with his other partner of 13 and a half years and they live an hour and a half away. But whenever they're in Melbourne, they stay with me.
Right.
And that's a lot of the time sometimes it seems. But technically, I live on my own. Because I need my space and I actually prefer. So, again, this is another of the lovely things about polyamory is if you think of the different kinds of connections you can have with people, you can have romantic or sexual or emotional or cohabiting or co-parenting or financial or kinky BDSM connections, you know. Mm. And with poly, you get to work out what level of what kind of relationship you want with whom.
I'll have a bit of column A, I'll have a bit of column B.
Rather than having to get it all in one package.
Mm.
Because it's actually a bit of an ask to find somebody that you're sexually attracted to and really drawn to and you can be honest and emotionally intimate and safe with and also live together well and be domestically responsible and financially responsible and parent well.
Yep.
And do that for your whole life. It's really a bit of an ask, you know. It's a bit of a tall order.
Yeah.
A lot of ways.
It seems remarkable that anybody's managed to do it ever in the history of the world. And it does kind of, it does beg the question, you know, given the level of freedom one can get from being able to have a bit of column A with partner A and a bit of column B with partner B, how the notion of monogamy and this one-to-one relationship developed. Polyamory, I apologize for that, but polyamory tends to make more logical sense.
Well, for some of us it does. Now, I want to say it's not better than monogamy.
No.
I live over the road from a friend who's been a friend for about 33 years and he is naturally monogamous. He's never looked at anybody other than his wife. He's never missed anything. He's never repressed anything. He's quite happy with his one relationship. Doesn't feel the need for anything else. Runs a million mile if anybody looks at him. He's just very comfortably, happily, naturally monogamous.
Mm.
But there aren't very many people like him, I don't think.
And not having other way around. But anyway, finding potential partners,
Yeah.
Because as you said, community is often around community and about sharing an experience that's not about finding partners. It's about sharing experience. Now, I'm sure that out of some of that, sometimes partners
occasionally might come up out of that. The odd, you know, eye across a crowded room.
But
there's a fair bit of hooking up from time to time. Yes.
But I take it the internet has probably assisted in a lot of that, being able to find.
And in fact, OkCupid, you can not only state that you're polyamorous, but they have poly-oriented questions around multiple relationships and how you feel about your partner, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, which means you can actually filter for people who are more oriented.
Mm. Yeah, I found that out I'm not going to say the hard way, but I found that out the practical way, because obviously the way I had answered my questions on OkCupid when I was single means that I was very, very attractive to every single polyamorous, bisexual, pagan male in Melbourne, because they all messaged me. On occasion. Not saying that I don't like a nice bisexual, polyamorous, pagan male, don't get me wrong. But it was surprising. At one point, it actually made me go through all of my answers to find out, because that was I was getting more than my average share of.
And more than you wanted, by the sound of it.
No, just the logician in me, the statistician in me, sort of turned around and was going, what is it that makes me show up on the you're a really good
match? Yes.
And then, I quite enjoyed the sort of working out the math of it, if you quite like, which is kind of probably why I was.
Yeah, so a lot of people go via OkCupid. And yes, the internet has made a massive difference to poly people being able to connect all over the place.
Sure.
And it probably also allows for the nature of the style of relationship, maybe what we might call a beginner polyamorous relationship, where the relationship is almost completely online, where you can have that, you can have your physical relationship with your partner and you can have a intimate relationship with someone online, and that might be I don't know if it is an easier stepping stone to a dual physical relationship.
That's the kind of relationship agreement that people will sometimes start with if they're coming out of monogamy and opening up their relationship. You will sometimes find that they'll say, all right, I'm okay if it's in that sphere, but not in this sphere. I don't want to meet them. I don't want to hear about them, something like that, you know. Or
the don't ask, don't tell.
Or just sex, not so much falling in love. Or you can have some sort of emotional intimacy if you don't fall in love. Or you can fall in love but don't have sex. Or, you know, people will come up with these kinds of agreements to help them move out of monogamy.
And they would all be valid.
Oh, everything. Look, if everybody who is a part of the agreement agrees on it, then it's valid.
Sure. And that's the point about polyamory. It's mutually ethical.
Yeah.
And people understand it. It's mindful.
It's up to each individual and each relationship and each group to work out what they want and what each of them wants and how to make it work.
And with the understanding that the rules change by negotiation.
Absolutely, yeah. And so a lot of time is spent negotiating.
Anne Hunter, thank you so much for joining us on Hide and Seek tonight.
You're very welcome. That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. We've learned a lot.
We have.
And to find out more, some great websites include PolyVic. Search for PolyVic. Also, Polyamory Australia is another one.
Melbourne, we should give a shout out to Melbourne Poly Tribe, particularly
Poly Tribe. They're on Facebook in particular. So is PolyVic on Facebook.
Yep.
And our website is Your Relationship Tool Belt.
And you run workshops, so check the website.
We run workshops and educational evenings and seminars, and also coaching.
Awesome. So check out the website for more information about that. Anne Hunter, it's been a pleasure to have you on Hide and Seek.
Thank you.
It's a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.